Thank you for helping us make Budget again last year. Thanks to your support, Lutheran Public Radio has been independent and in the black for almost 4 years. You've heard us say, now only our listeners can cancel us, and we mean it. Thanks for listening, thanks for your prayers, thanks for your financial support, and we're looking forward to partnering with you again in 2012. Christ-centered, cross-focused talk radio for the world, issues, etc., and sacred music for the world, LutheranPublicRadio.org.
I'm pleased we're doing well. I can't tell you who's going to win this thing, but I do believe that I'm going to have a great deal of support.
I think this is a volatile environment where people are going to walk in undecided or semi-decided, and maybe as many as 50% could switch during the course of the caucus.
I'm very encouraged by that, and I think we have the momentum here. I don't know what we're going to finish.
A few voices from those who are hoping to have a good showing today in Iowa. Of all places, it's where the presidential march officially begins for both parties. And of course, since the Democratic contender, President Obama, is not much of a question mark at all until we get to November, it's really the Republicans' game at this point. And all eyes are on that little state that, if you look at the number of people who are actually meeting for these caucuses, even out of the total population of the state of Iowa, it's a very small number of people. And of course, many believe that they not only kick off the presidential season in terms of, well, it's not so much voting as agreeing together, coming to some kind of a consensus. The Iowa caucus has some significance. Now, it's always viewed in retrospect. And even on this Tuesday afternoon, January the 3rd, while the caucuses are preparing to begin, we don't have the advantage of retrospect. We have to look ahead. We will be doing so in the first few minutes of Issues, Etc. Back live this Tuesday afternoon, talking about the Iowa caucuses with Mark Hemingway, an online editor at the Weekly Standard. That'll come up here in just a few minutes. Now, you can join us for the next 2 hours of the program, 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-6943. You can send us an email right here in the studio, talkback@issuesetc.org, or a tweet at @issuesetc. After our conversation with Mark, Deaconess Pam Nielsen will join us. We'll talk about two key events that do go together in the ministry of Jesus, the baptism and the temptation of Jesus, preparing a Sunday school lesson for this coming Sunday with Deaconess Pam Nielsen of Witness Mercy and Life Together. Dr. Jennifer Roback-Morse will round off the first hour. There is, well, Ron Paul actually said this recently, talked about one of those presidential contenders, by the way, about privatizing marriage. Why do we need marriage licenses in the first place? Let's have people go to the church and they can decide for themselves what they want marriage to be. Although he says he still believes that the institution of marriage should be between a single man and a single woman. We'll see what Dr. Jennifer Roback-Morse has to say about that. Then in Hour 2 of Issues, Etc. on this Tuesday afternoon, we conclude a series that we started last Tuesday during our vacation, concluding our 5-part series on Christian vocation today. Well, it's not just the catch-all, but it is covering all the other bases. We'll talk about the vocation of widow. That's actually something that the Apostle Paul spends a lot of time talking about. Youth, and then everyone else. Pastor Peter Bender of the Concordia Catechetical Academy will be our guest in Hour 2 of Issues, Etc. Mark Hemingway is a regular guest. He's online editor at the Weekly Standard. He joins us live from Washington, D.C. Mark, welcome back to Issues, Etc.
Hey, thanks for having me.
How do you explain that even today, the day of, there's really no clear front runner among the GOP candidates who are vying for Iowa?
Yeah, well, I think that's fairly obvious, which is that they're all, you know, they're all candidates with pretty significant flaws. it's fairly obvious, and I think there's widespread sentiment among the Republican Party that the A team is not on the field. And, you know, they are, you know, keeping an open mind about, you know, in terms of assessing all of the people out there. So, I mean, that's really all it boils down to.
Why isn't the A-team on the field?
That is a really good question. You know, it's tough to say. I mean, I think a lot of the candidates that people wish were running, like Chris Christie or Paul Ryan or Mitch Daniels, all have, you know, very good reasons in their own right for not running. You know, Mitch Daniels has some family issues he's attending to. I think Paul Ryan has always been on the leadership track and wants to be Speaker of the House someday. And I think Chris Christie is, you know, he's barely into his first term as governor of New Jersey. So, you know, these are all significant reasons for not running.
Everybody's had their turn so far, at least during the debate season. Now that the caucus season is underway, Rick Santorum seems to be enjoying a bit of a surge. Is it just his turn?
I think that's part of it. I mean, I think part of it is that Iowa voters want to send a message in the sense that there has not been a candidate who is broadly acceptable to social conservatives that looks like he's been, you know, he's able to win. You know, we've already sort of kicked the tires on Rick Perry a bit, and a lot of people decided that they don't like him due to his unimpressive performances in the debates and other things like that. So, you know, who's the next most electable, solidly socially conservative in the field? It appears to be Rick Santorum. So, you know, I don't know if Iowa voters necessarily think that Rick Santorum is the best guy to field in the general election, but I think they're trying to send a message to the party that, you know, these social conservative issues do matter, and they would like, you know, people to pay attention to it.
Do you think that if Governor Perry and Michelle Bachmann drop out after Iowa, do you think Santorum would rise further to the top of the list?
Well, obviously, yeah. I mean, to the extent that either of those guys have any support, I'm pretty convinced that Michelle Bachmann, you know, running on fumes at this point in time and will probably drop out tomorrow. You know, Perry is probably going to hang in there, at least through South Carolina, I'd say, because he's got the money in the organization. But, you know, certainly if Santorum, you know, does win and has a good showing here, I think some of that hardcore social conservative base could drift away from Perry and toward him. Yeah.
Mark, you said that each one of these candidates has some pretty serious flaws. Let's talk about them, as many as we can fit in here, beginning with Mitt Romney.
Well, Mitt Romney, of course, has not exactly been a very conservative guy. I mean, you know, nominally Republican, but, you know, in a sort of very liberal Northeastern tradition. He's also, you know, flip-flopped on abortion, which is, you know, a very important issue for, you know, social conservatives in the GOP base. And, you know, heck, indeed, a majority of the country in more so their lives. So, you know, that you know, especially in Republican primary and even in general electability concerns, that's something to factor in. Then there's the issue with Romney Care, you know, his big health care plan in Massachusetts that served as a national, that served as a model for the national health care plan that they just passed a year or two ago that remains wildly unpopular with the American public. You know, the our guy that was the architect for that is going to have some problems in the general election going after what is a key reason for any Republican candidate running against Obama. So that's, you know, Romney in a nutshell. I think Newt Gingrich, the problems there are obvious. He has had a troubled personal history. I think he's on his third wife. So, you know, again, that aspect of him doesn't appeal to social conservatives, although that's ameliorated somewhat by his recent conversion to Catholicism, which I think makes some social conservatives feel a little bit better about him. But he's been in the national spotlight a long time. He's got a checkered history. He's got some real triumphs, legislative and otherwise, but he's also, you know, the guy that once proposed giving laptops to homeless people because he's got a lot of crazy ideas. So I think people are not sure that he's, you know, solid enough of a representative. And then Michelle Bachmann, I think, is just for better and for worse. I think a lot of it unfairly, some of it a little bit fairly, has been portrayed as being somewhat, I think crazy is too strong a word, but she certainly said some things that, you know, sound like they are well outside the mainstream. And certainly the media and other people really like to seize on those things. And, you know, Rick Perry just has not been an impressive guy just in terms of his basic ability to communicate to voters, sharp in the debate.
What, did you mention Santorum?
I did not. Thank you. I did not mention Santorum. Santorum, remember, he lost an election just a few cycles ago. Now, he did win a couple of statewide elections in Pennsylvania, you know, which is no small feat. That said, in his later years as a senator, he got detached a bit, I think, from his home state. He got sort of caught up in being a national leader. And I think that he's not exactly doesn't always come across as sort of a warm, likable guy, which, you know, I don't know if that's going to hold up as a mainstream presidential candidate. And then further, the sort of the liberal America absolutely loathes him. I think there's some electability concerns in that regard. There's a lot of passion and animosity sort of begin to face the gay marriage debate and other things that were conservative. And he really got tarred with that unfairly in a lot of ways, but nonetheless, it's an issue.
With only about 30 seconds, John Huntsman, what are the weaknesses there?
John Huntsman is just baffling on many levels. He might might objectively have the most conservative, you know, record in terms of what he did as a governor or as anyone in the race. But he's run this really weird campaign where he's tried to portray himself as the moderate candidate. I'm not sure that's what the GOP base is looking for. They're looking for someone who can really combat it. And Huntsman has not come off as that guy.
We're talking with Mark Hemingway about the Iowa caucuses on this Tuesday afternoon, January the 3rd. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. Mark is online editor at the Weekly Standard. He'll be with us for just a few more minutes on the other side of the break. He joins us live from Washington. Then Deaconess Pam Nielsen joins us. We'll talk about baptism and the temptation of Jesus. Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse of the Ruth Institute will join us to talk about privatizing marriage. And then in hour two of Issues Etc., we conclude our five-part series that we began over the holiday with Pastor Peter Bender on Christian vocation. Today we'll be talking about the vocation of widow, the vocation of young people, and everyone else. That's coming up in hour two of Issues Etc. Our call-in number 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-6943. When we come back, a few more minutes with Mark Hemingway of the Weekly Standard. Why is Iowa important, or is it? We'll be right back.
Yes, there is a Messiah in Seattle. Messiah Lutheran Church and Concordia Lutheran School have served North Seattle for over 60 years, and we invite you to join us on Sunday mornings at 8 and 10:45 with Bible study at 9:20. Messiah Seattle is proud to support Issues Etc. To learn more, watch our adult information class videos online or on DVD. Our website is messiahseattle.org, 206-524-0024.
Thank you for helping us make budget again last year. Thanks to your support, Lutheran Public Radio has been independent and in the black for almost 4 years. You've heard us say, now only our listeners can cancel us, and we mean it. Thanks for listening, thanks for your prayers, thanks for your financial support, and we're looking forward to partnering with you again in 2012. Christ-centered, cross-focused talk radio for the world, Issues Etc., and sacred music for the world, LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Smartest listeners in radio, you're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Christ Lutheran, Jackson, Mississippi; Prince of Peace Lutheran, San Diego, California; Trinity Lutheran, Tryon, North Carolina; Our Redeemer Lutheran, Dallas, Texas; Calvary Lutheran, Yuma, Arizona; St. Paul Lutheran, Milford Center, Ohio; Peace Lutheran, Chehalis, Washington; Christ Lutheran, Noblesville, Indiana; Our Redeemer Lutheran, Lexington, Kentucky; and St. James Lutheran, Baltimore, Maryland. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to our website, issuesetc.org, click support, and print the one-page flyer. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll publicize your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. issuesetc.org, click support. The Issues Etc. 300. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about the Iowa caucuses that will begin shortly. Mark Hemingway is our guest. He's online editor at the Weekly Standard, joins us live from Washington, D.C. Well, we went through the weaknesses of the candidates before the break. Whoever emerges from the Iowa caucuses as the winner, what do they need to concentrate on next in order to take that next step toward a GOP nomination?
Well, you know, obviously it's about getting some momentum going here. You know, there have been so many leaders rise and fall here that, you know, someone has to demonstrate that they can, you know, consistently get votes here along the way. You know, and certainly Romney, who's sort of still the nominal front runner despite, you know, not being actually at the top of the polls for most of the time, has been very consistent in that regard. And if he emerges first or second out of Iowa, which is looking likely, he's going to have a lot of momentum coming into New Hampshire, where, you know, he was governor of the neighboring state and he has a house in New Hampshire and he's got a great, you know, relationship with the voters there. You know, if he, you know, he comes in first or second in Iowa and wins New Hampshire, he could come springboarding out of this, you know, crazy GOP primary with a lot of momentum in a very short amount of time, even though it looks like it's been crazy up to this point.
Does the fact that the GOP hasn't fielded its A team, to use your analogy, how does that bode for November GOP turnout in the general election?
That's a good question. You know, the real question here is the anti-Obama sentiment going to sort of trump the lack of enthusiasm, you know, for a guy like Romney from the conservative base? You know, and that remains to be seen. It depends a lot on how Romney runs his campaign and what he does to win over social conservatives and other people that are part of the Republican coalition that might be naturally dubious of him. But, you know, from what I've seen so far, I mean, like, the lack of enthusiasm in the base was a real problem in the last presidential election, you know, for McCain, who was kind of a liberal, moderate Republican in many respects. And, you know, it was harder, and that was a real big issue because he was running against a guy who generated a lot of excitement. But more than that, though, there wasn't a lot of strong reasons in some respects for Republicans to oppose Obama, just because there was so little that was known about him. Now that we know a lot about Obama, I suspect at the end of the day that the anti-Obama sentiment will outweigh the number of people that are turned off by the fact that Romney is not, you know, a conservative champion. But, you know, it's still going to be a factor, and you're going to have to see how Romney handles that issue and what he does to sort of fire up the GOP base heading into the election.
Other than being first, is Iowa important? If so, why?
Well, Iowa's important because, I hate to give, you know, credence to this, but it doesn't matter to politics, which is that it's going to set a lot of the media narratives and sort of frame how people think about the race, just in terms of you know, how the media reports on it and what information is being put out there in the next couple of weeks leading up into New Hampshire. So, you know, for better or for worse, it affects people's perceptions in that regard. That said, I think that it is, you know, no, I'm sure you have lots of fine Lutheran listeners in Iowa right now listening to this who may not agree, but this idea that Iowa and New Hampshire have this lock on determining who the presidential candidates are going to be is something that I think is frankly absurd and long outlived its usefulness, and it would be nice if we started mixing things up a bit.
Two quick final questions. First of all, if you would, call tonight in Iowa, who do you think will emerge from the caucuses?
I'd say the most likely scenario is probably Romney number one, with Santorum coming in two and Paul coming in third, although I think it's also possible that Iowa voters could decide to really send a message and put Santorum over the top. I think that some of the stuff that's emerged about Ron Paul's background and other things in recent weeks has dampen the enthusiasm there, but you know, it's, there's an outside chance that Paul could take it just because he's got such a fanatical organization.
And if you had to put your money down now for the GOP nominee late in the summer, where would you put your money?
It'd be Romney. It just, he's got the money, the organization. He's been very consistent, and he also, you know, he looks electable for better or for worse. I mean, when they do polls about who attracts independent voters and stuff, which is a key thing for, you know, winning a general election, obviously, Romney does very well relative to the other presidential candidates. And I think to some extent, even a lot of conservative candidates think that as much as they don't like Romney, the alternative is so much worse, and they're willing to hold their nose you know, consider the electability argument when it comes to Romney.
Mark Hemingway is online editor for the Weekly Standard. He joined us live from Washington, D.C. Mark, thanks for being our guest.
Thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure.
You can read his columns at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand.